Welcome to BSD Talk number 171. It's Friday, March 6, 2009. Wow, March already? I've been down to about one podcast a month. I'm sorry about that. I hope I can get a little more content out to you. Hey, if any of you have some friends who are developers or users and you want to record an interview, feel free to send it my way and I'll include it in the podcast. But all right, anyway, here is the interview. Today on BSD Talk, we're speaking with Andrew Doran from the NetBSD project. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Wes. Thanks.
Part of the reason I wanted to talk to you was not only about the upcoming release of 5.0 for NetBSD, but also some of the specific work that you've been doing. But maybe we could start with your history with the NetBSD project, and could you tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Unix and NetBSD in general?
Yeah, Unix I got involved with to my family. We've kind of, my brother and my father and stuff had been using it before. We were kind of quite technical and a long engineering background in my family, so I kind of got access to old systems and strange OSs and stuff like that. So I got involved with Unix maybe 15 years ago. And I had one strange machine that I didn't have an OS for. It turned out NetBSD ran on it. And that's how I got involved.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history, yeah. Just as simple as that. So, yeah. I needed to write a device driver for something because it didn't work, and it was a fun project. And that's how I became a developer.
And so NetBSD, at this point, I think, is it release candidate 2 for the 5.0 release?
That's correct, yeah. I think we're considering a release candidate 3, but it's almost there. It's almost ready to go.
So could you describe the difference between a minor release and a major release? You know, why is this a 5 as opposed to a 4 dot something?
If it were to be a 4 dot something, it would indicate that we had kind of, you know, one or two subsystems or components that were new or had major changes to them. So, for instance, if there was, say, a new firewall subsystem brought in or something along those lines, that would be a point release. But it would be generally compatible and look like the preceding major release. Major release is when we have, you know, a huge, long, protracted period of development. Between 4.0 and 5.0, just out of interest, I did this a couple of weeks ago. You could call it a 7.2 million line diff against source, and 2.2 million lines, that was in the kernel. So it's a huge amount of change, lots of new features.
So obviously, you know, the next question is, what are some of those new features? I don't want to read the release notes to everyone. I think people can go and get them themselves. But could you describe some of the features that you've been working on or some of the features that you're most excited about?
Yeah, well, obviously everybody's going to have a different take on them because they're involved with different aspects in the system. But to me, I think some of the most exciting ones are file system journaling, which is logging, or FFS. That's something that we wanted to provide for a very long time. I won't go into detail about the technology too much, but I'm sure everybody knows about it. But if your system has an unscheduled shutdown, it lets it start again without file system check, and it provides increased performance over your traditional BSD fast file system. That's something that we wanted for years. And finally, we're shipping it, so we're very excited about that. Another major one that sticks out in my mind is reliable suspend and resume on laptops. It doesn't work on all laptops. But it's a big thing, and again, that's something we wanted for a long time. The other two major features that stick out in my mind, two that I've had a lot of involvement with, are threading. We completely replaced the threading subsystem in 5.0. The old subsystem in 4.0 had some limitations and problems. It was, in certain configurations, it was unreliable. And it didn't scale to use all CPUs in an SMP system, so we've replaced that. The new system performs very well. It doesn't have those issues. The other major one that I was personally involved in was increasing scalability and performance on multiprocessor systems, which is when you look at it in terms of results and benchmarks and graphs, it's a huge change from 4.0.
Well, if I sort of back up a little bit and maybe hit some of these with a little more detail,
okay.
We'll go back to the file journaling. So this would be an opportunity for people to turn off soft updates and then not have to worry about massive file system checks if they have a large file system that take forever. When the machine crashes, turn it on, it will just quickly replay and they're good to go?
Absolutely. That's essentially it. Soft updates and logging, the theory and technically what they achieve is slightly different. And there has been a lot of discussion over the years about the merits of both of them. But ultimately, for the end user, they provide roughly the same thing, and that's good performance in the file system while, being able to sustain a power outage or an unexpected crash. Logging, of course, does have the advantage that it doesn't need to check the file system after the system comes back up. And the other major feature is that SoftDep, it doesn't work too well with systems that have disk caches. So if you have a standard IDE disk in your PC, or if you have some kind of a RAID array that has a cache on it that isn't battery-backed, it doesn't work very well with that. It can lead to corruption after a crash. Whereas with logging, that's not a problem. It's designed to work with that. So I think that's a major plus for it.
Now, is this only on FFS2 or also FFS1?
It works with both of them.
Have you seen much adoption of this by other BSD distributions or other versions of Unix that are using UFS and FFS?
No, I think nobody's rushed to pick it up yet. SoftDep, it works satisfactorily. And the technology is kind of, I suppose, to the different BSD groups, it's quite new. So, I expect that, say, OpenBSD and maybe FreeBSD will pick it up at some point in the future after it's bedded in a little bit more.
And I'm no developer, and I've never really looked at the code, but I remember someone saying once, way back, and this may be out of line, but someone said that the soft update code was definitely complicated. And is this particular code here a much simpler change to the fast file system than something like soft updates?
Yeah, I suppose that is true of SoftDep. It stems from its history. And when it was originally written, it was written so that it could be dropped into pretty much any AT&T, SVR4, or BSD-derived type Unix. And so, it's the limited set of hooks that hook into the OS, and it kind of sits out on the edge on its own. And what it tries to do is extremely complicated. You only have to look at the soft updates paper to see that. So the code itself is very complicated, and it's difficult to work with, and it has some problems. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a great idea, and it's implemented very well, but it does have problems. The logging code is a lot simpler for humans to understand and work with. It does actually have more hooks into the file system framework, I think, but it's very obvious what's going on. And it's just that much more easier for people to work with and see what's happening. So we've had a much greater range of people who have been able to work on it and to contribute to it.
And this is just metadata journaling, right? Not the data itself?
That's correct, yeah. Just metadata journaling. In the future, we would like to add data journaling to it. But with 5.0, it will just be metadata journaling.
And is this something, with some other journaling file systems, the sort of the on-disk format really isn't any different. There's just a journal so that you're able to read that file system off of a kernel that doesn't understand journaling. Is that the case with this also?
Yeah, that is correct. You should still be able to read the file system. If you modify it, you may cause problems. If it's been unmounted, then it's not clean. So if the system crashed and you go mount it as a regular file system somewhere else, you could damage it if you changed it. But you certainly still be able to read the file system.
And are existing file systems upgradable to journaling, or would you have to do a whole new FS?
No, the upgrade's really simple. You just put in the keyword logging in etc FS tab, and it works. Okay. The file system format remains the same. It will automatically create a journal within the file system, so there's kind of really nothing else for the systems administrator to do.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think that there seems to be a lot of work going into alternate file systems and sort of people moving away from UFS. So it's sort of refreshing to see some more work going on in this case. I think, FreeBSD also did gjournal, but, it's good to see people still putting some effort into the tried and true tested file systems.
If you look at, say, ZFS or what Matt Dillon has done with Hammer or even NTFS, they really have a lot of consistency features out of the box, which UFS is kind of old. It doesn't have them. But yeah, its major advantage is that it's proven. It's been around for 20 years, 25 years, I'm not sure. But it's been around a long time. It's known to work well. So adding journaling to it is great as an incremental improvement.
And then if we move forward to the threading and SMP work, I guess they're sort of related. Do you have a sense of what kind of scaling we're going to get out of this work?
It really depends on the workload. Yeah, you're talking horizontal scaling basically the size of the system. It really depends on the workload. Some workloads in some areas will perform not great. In other areas, you know, I'm confident to say that you could scale out to 32 CPUs quite easily. It really depends on what you're doing.
Were there any particular workloads that were used to test the threading and SMP work? You know, sometimes there's some kind of email on the list somewhere that says this operating system performs this specific workload a lot better. You know, often you'll see the case with like MySQL or something like that, or Apache. So the developers work towards a specific workload. Was that the case here with NetBSD?
Absolutely, yeah. We had some favorites. One was MySQL Sysbench, which is a well-known test. It kind of sends off a bunch of OLTP type queries to MySQL database and essentially times the throughput. Another one is the kind of classic shell development workload. So you're doing lots of compiling and running make jobs and removing files and deleting files and changing files. And for that, we just use the build system for NetBSD itself. And we, along the way, we kind of created a lot of kind of small bespoke benchmarks to try and time individual parts of the system and to quantify the effects of the changes that we were making. And there are a number of kind of micro benchmarks that we would apply along the way as well. I think it's hugely important. And when your goal is performance and your goal is to try and improve the speed of something, to be able to explain and say what you're doing, so being able to measure each individual change is really key. So that's what we tried to do along the way.
And are you a laptop user with NetBSD?
I'm afraid not, no. I do have a laptop with NetBSD on it, but the majority of my work would be on a desktop system.
So maybe not much to say from personal experience about this, the suspend and resume.
Not from personal experience, but I mean, I think it's very important. It's to be, for all of the free Unix systems, free operating systems, it seems to be something that they struggle with. And for us to be able to say, yeah, you know, on most laptops you can suspend and resume reliably, it's important and an exciting thing to be able to say. So,
and I don't know if you're involved with any of the Zen stuff that's going on in NetBSD. I know that NetBSD has a reputation of having some pretty good Zen support.
It kind of, I work a lot on the x86 port, so Intel 386 and AMD 64-bit port, and so I've kind of like crossover at the technical and source level, but not specifically in Zen itself. I don't have a huge amount of input into that.
Do you spend a lot of time in the console, or are you also using X?
Well, usually if I'm developing stuff, let me turn that on its head. If I'm just using the computer to get something done, like edit a document or browse the web, of course, I'm just going to use X. But developing, I usually have a few systems running. I'll develop on a desktop machine in an X, and anything that I test is running on separate machines, and I'll be logging in over a serial console on those. It's kind of much easier to manage if the system crashes, which does happen a lot if you're working on the kernel. So.
And do you do any development with compilers besides GCC? I know that the PCC work has been in both NetBSD and OpenBSD, but I just didn't know how many of the developers might actually be testing that.
We've had a good chunk of the developers working on it. It's really in drips and drabs, though. There's nobody kind of working on it full-time in NetBSD. That said, the two primary guys that work on PCC, as far as I can tell, Anders Magnusson and Gregory McGarry, they're both NetBSD developers. We had a lot of effort put into making NetBSD compile with PCC during the 4 to 5 development cycle. So very large chunks of the tree do compile with it. Most of the kernel compiles with it. The kernel doesn't work because there is still bugs in the compiler. But you can certainly compile most of it, and it makes an interesting test target for PCC, I think. After 5.0 and towards 6, I'm really hoping that we can work on solidifying PCC's position and making it really a first-class alternative to GCC just for building the system. The reason for that is that it's so much faster at compiling than GCC. That makes life easier for developers if they're making changes and need to verify what they're doing. Being able to compile the system quickly is a huge advantage. So.
I'm trying to think, are there sort of any other features you can think of about the 5 release that we might want to hit on for the listeners?
Yeah, it's one that I was involved in, it's kind of an extension of the SMT work, but it's real time. We've tried very hard to put a lot of the POSIX real time extensions into the system, and to essentially be able to call it a soft real time operating system. That means things like implementing all of the APIs and adding support for full in kernel preemption. So essentially, if you have a real time thread or process running on NetBSD, you can make the necessary API calls and know that it will have. If an event occurs that it's interested in, it will be woken up very quickly. There'll be very low latency between the event occurring and it being woken up. So that's kind of a big thing for users of NetBSD who are, for instance, using it in an embedded setting to build products, the fast response to events in real time.
So at this point, are you, at least in your use of NetBSD, working mostly in the current release, or do you have a lot of your stuff still in the 4 series?
I'd say in the last few months, I'm essentially I will work on 5.0 or on current, so the development branch. But pretty much all my work is done there. The reason for that, of course, is 5.0 release cycle is still going, so we need to merge things backwards and forwards and test them in both places. And a lot of the developers will work like that. So.
And so far, the 5 release is moving along pretty well for you and pretty stable.
Yeah, it has its problems, which we're still trying to iron out in a couple of areas. But I think over the development cycle, I've developed a lot of different stress tests for individual parts of the system and ways that I try and make stuff crash. And I'm finding that 5.0 is more robust than 4.0 when it went out. So we've put a huge amount of work into testing and improving systems. So many hours of testing have gone in. Over the last couple of years. So when it comes out, I'm quite confident it's production ready. You can run it on a production system.
And given that NetBSD runs on so many different architectures, do you have a lot of trouble, I should say not you, but the entire NetBSD organization, finding enough people with these bizarre architectures to really test them broadly?
Yeah, it's a difficulty for us. It can hold back development in some ways because people can kind of sit there and hum and haw and think, should I change this because I can't test it on version of NetBSD for the toaster. But we really have to be and try to be pragmatic about it and say, look, we reasonably can't expect someone to test this. If it's such a niche that we'll wait until the release is out, and if someone's got an issue with it, they can report back and we can work on it then. Obviously, that doesn't apply to what are really tier one architectures that a lot of people use. It is difficult for us in that it can make it difficult to test and slow down development slightly.
So if people want to download these release candidates, are they available in a typical installer or these sort of CVS files that they need to download?
No, we do nightly builds of the system. So for some of them get turned on and off at different times. I know at the moment we've got current, the bleeding edge, that's always switched on, and 5.0, the 5.0 branch that is switched on at the moment, and we do nightly builds of those. You can go to the FTP server, and in pub NetBSD, there's a subdirectory under there called NetBSD Daily, and there are builds that show up in there every day, so you can download the latest and greatest and try it. I believe there are ISO images in there, and basically everything you need to install using the installer. So it's not a case of compiling from source. It would have been 5 years ago, but it hasn't been in a long time.
Have there been any major changes to the installer in the 5.0 release?
The 5.0 timeframe, not to the installer itself, no. There's been kind of stuff that happens around it on the sidelines, but no core changes to the installer itself, no. For 6.0, we're hoping to change that very much. We want to add a mode to the installer. So that what you see now is the current install will become an expert mode, and that if you just choose to do a normal install, it would ask you much fewer questions and use reasonable defaults. And, you know, install the system for you is a minimum amount of fuss. So that's what we got to do at 6.0.
I did see some stuff on the list a little while back where some people were even talking about trying to find an option in the installer for desktop-based NetBSD systems.
Yeah, this is an initiative that myself and Jared McNeil started. It's the kind of simplifying the installer so that it's kind of simple option is one aspect of that. Leading off from the simple install, we want to provide an option so that the installer will go and put a desktop onto your x86 machine, and so that when the install is finished, you bring the system up. It's got a user account created for you. You've got a desktop system that you can log into, and it'll have OpenOffice and all the kind of usual applications that you would expect on there. And, just enough stuff to be able to browse the web, develop some applications, edit documents, that type of thing. So really quite basic, but the goal is for it to happen with the minimum amount of intervention in the early stages by the user. As kind of developers and people that use the system on a day-to-day basis, it's very easy to get lost and think, hey, the installer is perfect, it doesn't seem complicated, but that's because it's all so familiar to us, To people who haven't used it before, it can seem quite strange and unintuitive.
Well, that will be an interesting project to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I hope so. We're hoping to integrate it for 6.0, so expect to see some changes over the next few months towards that.
Well, are there any other topics that you wanted to talk about today?
I don't think there's anything that jumps to mind right at the moment, fortunately.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to leave comments on the website, it's actually getting a lot harder now because the spammers kept filling the content. So, unfortunately, commenting doesn't work so well. But hey, send me an email at bitgeist@yahoo.com. That's bitgeist@yahoo.com. Thank you for listening. This has been BSD Talk number 171.